Welcome to the ABC edition of Daytime Confidential, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we're discussing Michael's, well, shooting, I guess, and as well as our ideas for improving All My Children and what's happening on One Life to Live, and much, much more, so stay tuned. Well, ladies, another week.
Another person shot in the head.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Michael is now giving his mother a run for the money when it comes to being shot in the head. I hate to sound so cavalier about it, but this is the writing that we are being given, and it almost seems like they are retelling the story they told 2 years ago. What do you guys think of this whole story? Because this last week, I was talking with Jay on Instant Messenger. He pointed out to me that, in many respects, this is the story that has been 12 years in the making, in that from the moment that Carly took Michael away from AJ and went to live with Sonny, that at some point, this was going to come to a head.
And this was destined to happen. Yeah,
exactly.
The way it came about has been not entertaining. It's not entertaining to watch. It's disturbing, but it's kind of riveting in a way. Disturbing and riveting at the same time.
Well, the performances have been great.
Yes.
The writing has just...
It's disturbing that it took, you know, a child getting shot in the head to bring forth these type of performances. And no one really wants to see a child be shot in the head, with the exception of, obviously, the brass at General Hospital.
That's right.
They wrote it.
Oh.
But, you know, the performances that have come forward out of this.
Well, with good writing, you know, these are professionals. You know, some of the people on this show, I do believe, may still have huge careers in other forms of the entertainment industry after their soap days. These are good performers. Ron Hale is an excellent performer. Jane Elliott, I mean, I could go on and on with the names, but you all know them as well as I do. You know, when the writing is good, these people can bring it to the table. It's just sad that the writing only seems to be good when they're, you know, killing off a Quartermain. I hate to, you know, bring that whole thing all up again, but...
Well, and I wanted to ask about that, because it seems to me this last week when Mike was taking and at Kate's house and was reaming Sonny out about him needing to be in the hospital, blah, 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 you're his father, you need to be there. All I could sit there and think was, where in the world is AJ? And where in the world are the Quartermains? Because to me it was like they could have a third or fourth dimension, or add a third or fourth dimension to this story to make the impact so much greater. I mean, obviously Monica's in rehab and Tracy's trying to keep Lulu from getting caught in the middle of it. But where was Edward?
Not only where was Edward, I mean, we saw Carly give props to Alexis and tell her, now I understand why you tried to keep Christina's father a secret. I get it now. I didn't then, but I understand now. And I would also love to see her apologize to the Quartermains and what she did to them.
Oh,
AJ especially.
Great. Yes, and I'd like to see her at the gravesite telling him, you know, I done you wrong.
AJ, Alan, I mean, even to a lesser extent, Emily. She did them all nothing but wrong in her lies. I would also love to see her tell Robin that she actually did the right thing in trying to bring Michael's real parentage to light. And
well, now that might be asking for a bit much.
But you know what, though? When that came out, had it been left to stand as it was, it wouldn't be in the situation it is today.
I want to ask you about two quotes that Guza recently made regarding this storyline. And I know he's everyone's absolute favorite person, but he had two quotes. One which sort of caught my attention is, we always try to show the consequences. My question is...
Bullshit.
And the other one, which is the quote is this: "The show is about romance during wartime. For a lack of a better term, we have the high stakes possible, the highest stakes possible, because people can be killed. We're not going to ignore that. We're not going to go away from that. But we're going to make them very, very aware of the consequences and make them try to deal in non-violent ways."
Oh, please.
I think I pissed myself.
Well, you know, he must have some oceanfront property to sell in Arizona.
Oh, my goodness.
Because let me tell you something, he's full of crap. Who wants to see romance in wartime? And this is not wartime. It's an insult to even use...
Atonement was romance in wartime, you know?
It's an insult to even use the term wartime, considering that this country is at war, and there are soldiers dying every day. It's a joke, and that's another argument that we're not going to get into.
But don't you know?
That wasn't where he was going with it.
This is a battle for the hearts and minds of the people on the street.
Oh, what? Goodness gracious. Sweetie, what are you smoking?
I'm just being sarcastic, but I mean, that's the only way that I can come. I mean, unless it's a drug war, and then, but Sonny never actually sells drugs, so how can it be a drug war?
Wasn't that part of one of his quotes this week where he said, you know, we can't always just have this mobster who imports and there was some made up word or some word that I didn't know the meaning of, you know, that this is the way they have to show that what he does is bad because they've said, oh, he doesn't deal drugs and oh, he doesn't deal guns. And we're always questioning on the forums and around.
What does
he do? Yeah. Well, apparently, you know, it's just death. They just run around killing each other all the time because drugs are bad. Don't do that. Mm-mm. And weapons? Oh, no. But shooting children? Okay. Yeah.
Well, I got to think, if they want to say that he doesn't deal in weapons and he doesn't deal in drugs, he's got to deal with merchandise on the black market.
Right.
Without
a tax stamp.
So all he's become is some high-class pirate?
Apparently.
He's a high-class fence, for lack of a better term.
Oh, there you go. Sonny walking down the street, pull open his jacket, and inside you see a whole bunch of different versions of fake Rolexes. I can just see it now.
You know, he's importing those Cubans with a different band than the Dominican Republic. I don't know. But, I mean, they don't leave much to the imagination if it's not drugs.
He could be laundering money.
Well, he has to launder money because he's making money off this and he has to make it legal, so he has to launder it somehow. He's laundering the money through the coffee business. The coffee is a front for the shipments for him to have the waterfront piers.
So let me get
one
this.
One of the things I find so confounding is that him wanting to use that front to convince his kid he's not in a dangerous. I guess that's a throwback to last week's conversation. I apologize for getting off topic.
Well, so let me get this straight. We have now watched yet another Quartermain get shot, lying in a coma in a hospital, because a man who does not sell drugs, does not sell arms, and is supposedly in the mob, is being shot at, but yet we have no real criminal behavior or evidence of actual criminal behavior?
Well, I think the idea is that he's a white-collar criminal.
Yeah,
no, he
like
does
maybe
something.
Maybe all his crimes are not against people. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense because he has ordered Jason. I mean, we have this argument with the Jason fans all the time, and I don't mean to offend anybody. Trust me, I'm so politically correct now, people don't recognize me in the forums, okay? But, you know, he's been a hitman, and they've been trying to edge their way around that. You know, I mean, he literally kills people for a living, but that's okay.
And have you noticed that we never actually ever see him kill anybody? It's always other people?
Well, yes, because he's really not a hitman. He's an enforcer.
Oh, now there's that tightrope again that we're walking.
Wouldn't it be something where Sonny, yes, being the kingpin, quote unquote, would have to pay for his crimes, but if it's Jason that is the person who's actually committing the crimes, shouldn't this story be about Jason as opposed to Sonny?
Well, it kind of always has been about Jason because I'm not a Jarley fan. You know, I really don't root for couples, but in a way, this has been about Carly manipulating Jason all these years as well. Do you know where I'm coming from?
Yes.
Yes, Carly is the master manipulator, and she has basically manipulated all of this into being.
And it is about Jason.
She chose first Jason to be the father. You know, then that, you know, got blown out of the water, and, you know, the real father came to light, AJ. She didn't think AJ was good enough. She made sure that he thought he was back to being an alcoholic and basically completely worthless in his son's life. Got Sonny to come forward and make sure, you know, become the father. And hold Sonny up to this wonderful standard. Got AJ on the meat hook. You know, did all of these things, made sure that Michael had as little contact as possible with his blood relatives, the Quartermains. And she made all these decisions. She took that kid around with her in whatever direction she felt like going in. She dragged him along in all her choices.
Right.
Yep. So basically, what this all comes down to is the fact that basically, Carly's one screwed up broad.
We've always known that, and they're putting Lulu down the same road.
Oh, let's not even get started on that, please. Let's not, because it's...
Yeah, we don't have the time for that.
No, we do not have the time for that, because it's just atrocious that they're turning her into Carly 2.0. I don't know...
How atrocious is it that, I'm so sorry your son's been shot in the head, but Johnny didn't do it! Johnny didn't do it! He was with me!
Carly's restraint in that scene was remarkable. Laura Wright really is bringing home some great performances.
Well, she saw
the way she looked at her
in Lulu in that moment.
Carly is seeing her reflection in Lulu.
You know, because that's what she did when everybody was telling her Sonny was junk, and she defended Sonny to the nth degree.
Making a prediction here. Next 2 years, Lulu's going to be pregnant with Logan's kid and pass it off as Johnny's, or vice versa.
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt. If she has this one, you mean?
If she doesn't go and have another abortion.
Yeah.
But, you know, Carly is, you know, looking back on how many times did she choose to marry Sonny?
Multiple.
Three or four, yeah.
And every time she did, wasn't that Bobby standing there telling her you're doing the wrong thing?
And wasn't it great to see Bobby this week?
Yes.
Oh, she is so missed. So missed. Very much belongs in the storyline. And also, be it that Mike is Sonny's father, I was very happy that Carly did not go off on him and throw him out.
Me too.
Carly's going a bit over the edge, but if you have any comments on this storyline, because it is quite controversial, and obviously we thought the performances were great, but the writing is questionable, send your emails to podcast@daytimeconfidential.com. We'd love to read them, and who knows, maybe we'll read them on another episode.
Well, I just want to say I don't think the writing is questionable. I just think the writing didn't go far enough.
The subject matter is questionable, that they chose this subject matter, because some of this writing has actually been pretty good. They're really good with these capsules, you know, when they, like, take a story completely out of context and just focus on one little element. They do that very well. But choosing to shoot Michael in the head and to move him off camera for a while, they could have sent him to school or anything else. It doesn't have to be so much blatant violence. I don't know why does it have to be romance in wartime? Why can't we just have romance? That's not romantic enough. Well, that, you know, clearly someone hasn't been through some of the things I have.
Last week we discussed in brief this, well, not in brief, but we'll be discussing in brief today, the storyline of Star's pregnancy and what the potential options were. We talked about on the blog, we talked about on the podcast. Karen was emailing me in response to last week's discussion, and she says, you know, Luke, she says, wouldn't it be something if Star decided to put the baby up for adoption and gave the baby to Michael and Marcy? To which I thought, wow, that would be a twist. So
it certainly would.
It's a great idea, but Todd would never let that happen.
Wow.
And the writers are taking the easy way out with this story.
Well,
and it's actually quite disgusting.
The writers tend to take the easy way out.
Let's just clarify what easy way out is. Is it General Hospital fall down the stairs easy way out, or is it General Hospital let's run off and get an abortion with basically no repercussions way out?
From what I understand, it's the one life to live version of the easy way out.
Which is?
You know, have them stairs. Hit by a car. Yeah. Jessica. Salvation. It's going, from what I understand, it's going to be an accident of some type, and she's going to miscarry. So,
well, I tell you what, there hasn't been done on daytime in a really long time, and that's the ridiculously young mother who decides to keep her baby.
I was going to say,
Knight did it once. I know you're not old enough to remember that. Luke, I know you're not, but Edge of Night did this wonderful story with this 15-year-old who, from a really good family, and she got pregnant, and it followed her and the unwed father, and the families kept them apart, and she actually had the baby and kept the baby, and it was done so well. It's one of my fondest memories of, I believe it was Edge of Night. If I'm not, somebody please drop me a line and let me know what I'm thinking about if I'm incorrect, okay?
I would love to see Star have the child and have Todd realize that she's not really a little girl anymore. You know, because he's been absurd.
He has been absurd.
Locking her in her room, then, taking the doorknob off the door and having her, follow around with a bodyguard, taking away her phone, her internet, her computer.
I actually kind of agree with that in a
no, but I'm
real life
the,
concept, you know.
The whole thing in general.
Yeah.
Can I just say one thing? As much as I was concerned on how this could play out, One Life to Live, I've been enjoying it so much as of late that to realize that it's a distinct possibility that she could lose the baby because of something like being hit by a car, I find myself extremely disappointed at this moment.
I would be, yes. If that's what happens, I'll be disappointed. It's like I quoted someone, and excuse me, I don't have it right in front of me, so I can tell you who said from DC that they trust Carlivati. Is that how you pronounce
Carlivati?
Carlivati, that they absolutely trust, no matter what he does with this, that it will be good soap. And again, I apologize that I can't say the contributor's name for Daytime Confidential who wrote that, because I sat and stared at that for a really long time. That's saying a lot in this day and age for one of us fans to just put it out there. Oh, I trust whatever they're going to do, that it is really going to be good and I'm going to enjoy it. So that's a vote of confidence that has One Life to Live has built up amongst its fans in the last 6 months to 9 months that is practically unheard of in the last decade.
But
then
to
hear on top of that they might take the, do the accident, she loses the baby. Since she's pregnant now, I'd really like to see them deal with it.
I agree. At the same time, you got to realize that Ron did have his ideas on what he wanted to do with the soap. He left for the strike. Scabs came in. They wrote their own stuff. Took the show in their own little direction. Now he's come in and he needs to pick up the pieces. And if that doesn't fall with the way he wanted his pieces to go, he's going to get rid of it in the most expedient fashion.
And I can understand that from his standpoint. It's just that I expected better. Even if she were to end up losing the baby some other way, I was expecting some creativity and uniqueness. I was not expecting the hit by the car, fall down a stairs.
I'd settle for reality, something like, someone, a young lady her age is often not physically ready to carry a child. So they could actually not have the pregnancy go through and tell a socially relevant storyline about it also. Because pregnancy in young teens is very hard on the girls.
And it's very dangerous. And
very dangerous for them.
Portray the true medical, background.
Now that would be unique because
GH can't do it, so.
Oh, GH doesn't have a prayer in heaven of being able to do it, and they have the hospital.
Well, the hospital, the HIV mom, and they still can't tell a socially relevant storyline.
And that's sad because they, at one time, had the reputation that they could. And I think I think One Life to Live definitely has the talent in place that they could take the crown away from GH as far as socially relevant storytelling if they could get their teeth into it.
Well, heaven knows all my children threw their crown or tiara down the trash pipe.
With the unabortion storyline?
Yeah, yes, pretty much with the unabortion storyline, which let's talk about All My Children. It's one of those things where this last week we were all sort of discussing before the podcast, and we couldn't really come up with a whole lot that we enjoyed. So instead of going negative, we thought we would talk about how we would improve the show.
Step one has happened. They're bringing Lawrence Lau back as Greg.
Isn't that for a guest visit, though?
They may start that way. You know, sometimes
probably
guest
depending
visits,
on his response,
right?
The fan response to it.
Yeah, guest visits sometimes tend to evolve into more. I just think it's a great nod to history. Jesse and Angie have been really good about bringing history back to the show.
That they have handled it very well with them. If they can handle Greg's return in the same responsible manner, I'm really looking forward to it. But what good is his coming back if Liza's not there?
Maybe that's something that they can work on. If they can get him to stay, maybe.
Oh, don't even put that out there, because we will get quoted for that, and we will. And
it's a possibility. People need to understand that things are, you know, never say never in Soapland.
I would say never, but the likelihood of her coming back without a recast is slim to none.
I was going to say the dreaded R word. Yeah, I was.
Right. A recast is always possible too. Who knows? All I'm saying is that it would be great to have the character of Liza back on the canvas as long as they're keeping to history.
So, Belinda, how would you improve All My Children?
That's kind of dangerous coming from someone that has so little history with the show at this time. I think that I would definitely cut back on the time that Kendall and Greenlee are on screen and Ryan. I would give some of the other people, yes, some of the veterans, I know, I'm like a broken record repeating myself, but give some of the older people. Tad has had some good story, and so has Adam. But, you know, I'd bring some of the other people back. And give them a better story instead of focusing on the same set of characters that people are just sick of.
Well, and see, my solution for remedying All My Children. First, you bring back Robin Christopher as Sky. That is the first and foremost thing. I don't care who else you bring back. Angie and Jesse as a couple are great, yes. If you want to bring in one person, in my opinion, who can shake up the entire cast with almost just by walking into Pine Valley, it's Skye. She'd shake up the Chandlers. She could be somehow involved in Fusion. She could go toe-to-toe against Erica. Shake everything up just by bringing Robin Christopher into Skye. My second idea would be, even though I agree with Belinda, the Kendall, Greenlee, Ryan, Zach, Annie, Aiden show needs to be reduced. Greenlee and Kendall need to get some dialogue back, and they need to stop being these gooey-eyed friends. And I realize that things will probably change from that, but part of the fun of those two characters last time that Rebecca Buttig was around was the fact that they had great dialogue, whether they were fighting or friends, and the dialogue for those two has been lacking at best. I think that, in some respects, the other thing that you could potentially do is, for the younger generation, Petey. Petey needs to be recast. Opal's Petey needs to come back. He needs to be Colby's age. He needs to be able to mix things up because, yes, it is nice that she's in this relationship or potential developing relationship with Frankie, but if you wanted to bring one character back that in that age group to shake up things, Petey, to fall in love with a Chandler, would be great soap. So, those are my three ideas for improving it. They can take them or leave them, but I think that they would make it much more entertaining to watch. Tina, do you have any other suggestions?
Personally, I think Aiden can go away. I know that, you know, Kendall's going to be telling...
Positive.
No, Aiden needs to go away to start with. Kendall is going to be telling Zach that, you know, she slept with Aiden. Aiden goes away. Zach kind of turns to Greenlee. I would love to see a triangle between the two of them, because I would love to see Kendall and Greenlee go back to their sniping ways, because if I have to have Greenlee on my screen, that's the only way I can stand her.
Oh, yeah. Greenlee is a snipey bitch. And it's sort of one of those things where on the CBS podcast this last week, Jay was going, when can we get my – or he goes, when can I get my Sammy back? And it's sort of the same thing with Greenlee. It's like, when can we get the Greenlee back? And I hate to do it based on the promos, but when can we get the real Greenlee back? The writing for this Greenlee is not the real Greenlee. It wasn't for the previous person. Not, no offense to anybody either. That wasn't their fault. The writing for Greenlee as a character has just not been good.
See, Luke, you need to be careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
Hey, I will be happy to have Rebecca Buttig back without great writing. I will be happy for that. But now that she's back, I think that the writers can step it up a notch or two. But
well, I think that's the bottom line to this entire discussion about all three shows. The writers have been consistently stepping it up on One Life to Live. We've all seen it. It's amazing and not understandable that the ratings have not reflected that. But, you know, the writing, if the writing on all three shows were just stepped up a notch, we probably would be out of business. Wouldn't have anything to get on here and have these wonderful conversations about.
Most people talk about how One Life to Live is this greatly improved show and what have you, and the last, like, 6 weeks, all they've been putting in the promos are Star and Cole. And if you That's look true. At the ratings keep going down. They're losing in the key demos. And, Belinda, it goes back to what you were talking about with vets. Mm-hmm. People don't want to watch Star and Cole.
They wouldn't mind watching Star if she was being, as a teen should be, in a minor storyline that is integrated into the rest of the big picture storylines.
That's true.
Well, it's not even just that. We just don't want to watch them monopolize the screen.
What do you guys think of the Dorian versus Lindsay potential? Because these two have been friends, but now that Dorian knows that Lindsay's been helping out Clint, boy, that has some potential.
I think it could be interesting. I mean, those two are fascinating. The actresses are wonderful. The characters are both very deep. They have a lot of facets. I would look forward to the two of them going toe-to-toe over B.E., except that Lindsay's, her whole help, did her culpability in this dirty work of Clint's become known this week?
No.
Clint,
no,
not her
yet.
Out?
No, Clint, in fact, has now called her for more assistance on the newest threat.
And which is why I'm asking about Dorian, because Dorian now knows she's helping him.
Well, you got to realize the dynamic has been for a very long time. It was basically Lindsay and Dorian versus Nora.
Right.
And now, by default, Lindsay is basically changing sides. Because Nora, of course, wants to help Clint and help the Buchanans. She has a Buchanan child, what have you. And now Lindsay's doing the same thing. Now, her motives are not pure. She's doing it to stay on Clint's good side, and especially to be on Beau's good side. Even though he doesn't know what's going on, she wants to keep him happy.
I don't know. She must be back after Clint, because she should know Beau well enough to know that Beau is going to cut her loose when he finds out her dirty little dealings.
Well, Lindsay always has this thing in her head that nobody's ever going to find out. You know, that's part of the beauty of Lindsay. I mean, and think about it. Look at everything she's gotten away with over the years. You know, she just thinks it's going to be one more thing that she's going to be able to, quote-unquote, rewrite history and get away with. But now you're taking the dynamic, and it's becoming Lindsay and Nora versus Dorian, because that's how this is going to end up.
That could be really good. On that note, I want to go around the circle real quick. Performer of the week, Belinda?
I'm going to have to say Laura Wright. Just the look on her face has been great. I've felt her pain, and with my severe hatred of Carly, to be able to feel compassion for what she's going through instead of just laughing myself silly the entire time, saying "I told you so" over and over like I'm chanting it to the gods. You know, it's amazing. I really have to give Laura Wright all the credit for that, for making me feel this compassion, because I think without her in the role, I can't imagine that I wouldn't be celebrating this travesty even more than I already am.
Okay. Tina, performer of the week?
I second the same, that one.
Well, good, because then that leaves me to be able to take Erica Slezak as Vicky this week, because that stuff, when she was in there with Clint, was awesome. And then when you take and you have, like, her talking to Charlie about how this is unnerving her, great, great stuff. Totally enjoyed it. Well, on that note, we would encourage you to send your emails to podcast@daytimeconfidential.com. Comment on this episode in our forums at forums.tvfanonline.com or on our blog under the episode, whatever this episode ends up being, ABC something for this week. It's always a pleasure to visit with you ladies.
Very nice. Thank you again.
Until next time, so long.
Good night.
Bye-bye.